Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to NBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grind some tape.
What is up? That was a soft click over there. For those of you who don't know, well, I play off sound cues in here because we don't have, like, you know, personal professional ears in ears in here. Yeah, it was a very soft click today. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. We have a loaded show for you guys tonight on a Monday night here in the studio. Last studio show of the week because the boys and I are on a road trip starting tomorrow. We will have further details on that tonight. It's an absolutely marvelous Monday night here on the network, and we are loaded as usual. We got some quarterback talk tonight, boys. How about that?
Oh, yes.
I'm not so excited about the quarterback talk as I normally am this time of the year. Because normally at this time of the year, I'm like, dang, it's like 15 mega dudes out there. I mean, look at all these seed spinners we got across the country in the 2020 class. 2027, I don't know how I feel about it. We're going to talk about it tonight, though. What else we got? Tennessee's fortunate loss. That's what we're going to call that tonight. Tennessee had a fortunate loss in the court cases. Don't know how Tennessee fans feel about that, but we're going to talk to those guys tonight. And we have some Lane Kiffin news.
Of course we do.
Oh, good.
What's some Lane Kiffin news tonight? Like and subscribe. Subscribe, the important part there. Those of you watching us live, make sure you're hitting that like, that thumbs up button. Used to call it a like. Now it's just a thumbs up button. And it does cool things when you hit it. It makes like little emotes fly. Make sure you're hitting that, and make sure you're subscribing if you are not. We're on that road to 100K. We know it's a slog during the off season. Mm-hmm. We've come up with a slogan. We're in the search for the sickos. All right. So if you're an absolute sicko fan, that all you can think about, all you can consume is college football, we got you right here. All right. So make sure you're subscribing and make sure you're telling your friends about us. But boys, let's start with the news. We are on a road trip tomorrow.
That's right.
We are headed up north. Up I-75, is that 75, right?
I believe so.
That's, yeah. I-75 straight through or around Nashville, and then up through one of them other states, and then up and eventually into the Indianapolis, home of the Colts and home of the NFL Combine. Our third year going to the Combine. Your second? Mm-hmm. Your second. Christian Kirby and I's third year. We're real vets. He's a savvy young veteran, though. Y'all excited?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Looking forward to it.
No, always good to take a breather from football, and then the combine allows you just to get right back into it. Feel like you're back in season.
Oh, you took a breather with all the film studies I made you come in here and do?
I mean, from the standpoint of, you know, weekends are a little more free, yes, than they are in the season.
No one watches more ball in February than Jonathan Williams. Nobody. Yeah. Nobody out here whipping the pin is out here watching as much ball in the middle of February as Jonathan in college football.
There's not a film study that I miss.
That's right. You locked
every
in.
Every single one, I'm locked in for him.
Locked in. And you would be locked in if our chat wouldn't have completely forbidden off-season ditties. So
that's true.
They got you out of film study,
back,
buddy.
They'll be back, though. Don't worry, guys.
They'll be back come this fall. You won't have any choice. But, yeah, man, we're excited to do that. What are you guys most excited for about the NFL Combine? Sneaky, I got a top five for you.
I feel like the interviews you get to do at the Combine are probably the most unique that we get to do, because it's a little more freelancing, if you will, mm-hmm, as far as like the questions that you get. And then also there's points in time, too, like depending on who's slotted at the same time as the players that we get to interview. Sometimes they're pretty personal because it might just be you and a couple other people sitting there interviewing a former Georgia player, because Travis Hunter might be in one of the other corners, and that's where everybody else is at. I don't think we'll have one of those this year, right? Probably not going to have one of those.
Not a Travis Hunter like that, no.
Like next year.
I don't think there's a megastar.
Next year it'll be Arch. Year's
oh, my God, the Arch machine.
The Arch one
next year will
SEC
be nuts.
Media Days was crazy enough. But, yeah, it won't be one of those this year. But, yeah, they get to be kind of personal, and it's just a cool experience to kind of talk to those guys one last time before they go off to the NFL and you don't see them again.
I know it's a national hour, but from a local standpoint, you are correct in those interview settings. It's one of the lone times you can see the interviewee, or the subject matter rather, look at you like a light bulb goes off because they see one familiar face, mm-hmm, in a crowd full of what is happening right now. Mm-hmm. what is happening right now? Or better yet, like you were mentioning, like some seventh round draft, projected draft pick that none of the NFL draft Twitter gurus care to interview. And it's just you kicking it with a 4-year starter in the SEC.
Yeah.
Not a bad way to go. That's for sure.
Yeah. Piggybacking off of that, I think it's also cool to interview these players that they've kind of let their guard down just a little bit as far as talking about their old team goes. Now, you're not going to get some off the wall, off, you know, types of comments that some people give. You get those from a few people, but for the most part, they're not as worried about saying something that's going to get them disciplined by a head coach. They're more willing to tell fun stories about certain things, and that goes for all the players that we interview, not just Georgia ones. So that's what I'm looking forward to as well.
Absolutely. And I will say this, okay? You know the one question we have to hear 1,000 different times.
Oh, yeah.
Who have you had meetings with this week? Have you met with the Jaguars? Have you met with the insert team I cover? Huh?
Formal or informal?
Formal or informal. Oh, that's right. Formal or informal. Thanks. I just shouted at you over 30 other reporters to ask that so I can go write one article about it. Also, the thing that I despise nowadays, this is going to sound really, really get off my line coming from a fat head with a YouTube account, but you TikTok accounters that go up in there and ask them what their favorite cheeseburger topping is, I do not like you. I do not like you at all. So there's that. You know, had to get that off my chest early.
I don't mind those questions if, like, we're 8 minutes into the interview and it's very clear.
If it's dragging.
Yeah, if it's dragging, like, people aren't asking as many questions. Yeah. Like, hey, pop in there and ask them what they get at the gas station.
We stepped on a Travis Hunter interview last year to ask him, like, favorite dipping sauces for chicken fingers. And I'm like, what? What are we doing? Anyways, there's that. I got a top five. You want it?
Of course you have a top five.
Top five combine moments over the last 3 years. Jonathan, you want a 1-5 or 5-1?
1-5.
Oh, you're getting it right this time. We're in tune tonight, Jonathan and I. Number one. I hit Mike Tomlin with a door in a bathroom at a bar.
Won't be doing that this year, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, there will be no Mike
Tomlin. Dude, he runs that place.
He's just camping out now.
That one bar we constantly go to when we're up there, Mike Tomlin owns that joint.
You've got better odds of doing that at a Georgia basketball game now.
Yeah.
That's a fact. I mean, straight up, I mean, just classic me, Buffalo, just walking up into, just bumping into stuff. Had one of them double-way swinging doors at this fancy establishment. On some loose hinges as well. And wham, hit him right in the back. And he turned around and like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't even realize who it was till I walked right up at the bathroom. I think I've told that story before. Number two, in the same establishment, 1 year later, Jonathan Williams drops a Bud Light bottle right, Michelob, right there on the floor. Psh, really, really crowded, yet oddly quiet bar, filled with nothing but boisterous conversations. All ceased the moment he broke a bottle.
Yeah, I was about to say, it was certainly quiet once the beer bottle in my hand shattered. And by the way, I don't think that was my fault. I would like to point out that I believe someone, not going to name names.
Attaboy.
Bumped my hand and proceeded to create a explosion of a beer bottle on the floor. But yes, it got very quiet.
I don't believe false accusations.
I'm just saying.
Oh, I feel attacked, even though you didn't attack me.
It was empty, so I was overall cool with it for the most part, other than the fact that I had drawn attention of about 20 NFL GMs.
A lot. In an area and a time where we definitely did not want any attention to us.
Yeah.
You know, we feel cool and comfortable in college football settings. People don't know who the hell we are in an NFL setting.
It's a very different setting.
It's kind of nice, actually.
Yeah. Until that moment happens. You know, if that moment happened in an SEC bar, everybody's like, it's all right. Sorry, not, I mean, we were standing next to three NFL GMs.
Yeah, they were all around.
Three NFL GMs and a certain prominent NFL reporter. But hey, hopefully we bounce back this year. Hopefully we shake back. I think this year it's all about what people we got in town, what movers and shakers we can bump elbows with. How about that? Excited for that. Are we going to do a car show tomorrow?
We can, we can. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
I think I'll also get this one out of the way. I'm kind of excited to have some cold weather again.
Oh, top five moments one and two. Three through five are off the record Hondo Carpenter moments.
Ah,
yes.
Yeah. Also, that's why I didn't mention them.
It doesn't have to just be Hondo Carpenter. Just being amongst the people of that beat and seeing what other people are like. There's some, dare I say, interesting people.
But you think college football beat reporters are interesting and peculiar? Let me introduce you to the NFL beat.
I want to circle back on this. Have cold weather again, Tate.
Well, yeah, what,
it's 30 degrees outside. True.
I did.
It's been cold.
The wind chill's negative 19.
We had back-to-back weekends of ice or snow
but
recently.
The week leading up to that was warm. I was like, I'm not ready yet for it to be spring.
Oh, I was. That weather was beautiful. That was
what
awesome.
Kind of madman? Hopefully, we have a safe travel up there to Indianapolis. I'm sure we will.
Any reason why we...
No, I'm trying to figure out a transition into South Carolina football players not being safe.
Yes.
And having some bad luck. But, hey, they dodged a bullet. Have you heard this? Did. South Carolina's starting offensive tackle, Jacarius Peaks, the NC State transfer that I would imagine went for north of 1.3. That's safe.
Yeah.
Probably was the top three tackle in the transfer portal. Reportedly hurt his knee. Now, the internet swears this happened at a 3-on-3 organized football team event. Not like playing pickup out in the backyard, but like the team was having a get together, and one of the we're going to bond moments was let's roll that round ball out, even though we're all 300-pound football players, and let's play some 3-on-3. Allegedly reported on the internet. I'm not saying this happened. I'm just saying the internet seems to believe it's happened, which has made me think of this. It's all great news for South Carolina fans that it sounds like he's going to be available for the fall. He will not be available for the spring. I got a game for you boys.
What's your game?
We like to play every once in a while a game of so-and-so looks like. Mm-hmm. So we got Shane Beamer looks like, but this one is a very specific edition. This is pickup edition, pickup basketball edition. Shane Beamer looks like he slaps the floor on the first possession of defense.
Mm, for sure.
I can see that, yeah.
Shane Beamer looks like he asks, are we going shirts and skins? And then demands to be skins.
Okay.
Feet for free.
Okay.
I don't know about that one.
You don't think so? How about this one? Shane Beamer looks like he would call a ticky-tack foul after he just hacked the ever-loving shit out of you.
I could see him.
Some competitiveness to him.
I could see him calling a petty foul when things get a little too intense.
So how about this? Petty foul? Other way. I could see Shane Beamer looking like the guy that takes a charge down 8 in a game to 10.
Oh, yeah.
Dang.
Gotta have those guys.
That is true. That's
requirement.
True. I'm surprised no one said Shane Beamer definitely is hooping in Chuck Taylor's.
So the way you play this is Shane Beamer looks like he would definitely hoop in Chuck Taylor's.
No, this is not looks like. This is a proclamation. I'm almost certain that Shane Beamer gets down and laces up his Chuck Taylor Converses when he's about to play some basketball.
Shane Beamer definitely looks like he hoops with his shirt tucked in at all times.
See, I could see that more than going skins. I don't know. I don't know if Shane Beamer's just out here eager to take the top off.
Brother, Shea Bieber walks around his office without his shoes
on,
bare
feet. That's different, though.
He's thonging between the toes, and you don't think that he's...
Facts!
He would escape taking his shirt off in a basketball game?
There's a big difference between not wearing a shirt and like the whole barefoot culture of like, it's how nature's intended us to be. Like, there's a whole subculture that... I could see Shane Beamer playing basketball barefoot before I see him going shirtless. Shane Beamer also looks like he's just a classic cherry picker. I'm just kind of like the jog on defense, and then as soon as the ball gets you, sprint down and have to get an easy layup.
But he's this specific type of cherry picker, and if you've played pickup, you know of fast break layup. Oh, I smoked it. I'm going to act like I'm really tired right now and put my hands on my knees while everybody else is playing defense. Oh, and then the turnover happens. Oh, now I'm back up, and I'm going to get a layup.
Or loser limps like,
yeah.
Ooh, outlet.
Yep.
Outlet.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
But you would assume the 3v3 half court.
Yeah.
Hard to cherry pick in a half court.
By the way, if you have ever played pickup basketball too, and there's a football player at this pickup, you at all times you are making sure you're aware of where said football player is because they have no remorse for like physical contact or anything. Like you might get shoved 5 feet out of bounds if you're not careful. So having the idea of having an entire football team go play basketball and think that maybe something bad might not happen injury-wise, probably not a good idea.
I've seen copious videos of Dabo Swinney doing this with recruits because Dabo can hoop for like a 55-year-old white man. He can hoop.
I could see it.
That's completely different. That's if you get hurt, we get you at a discount.
Man. Correct. we're bargain bin shopping at this point. But yeah, no, you're right. This is totally different. Even crazier, the fact that you told me today that the internet swears this is not the first time they've had a player.
I saw South Carolina fans saying that. I think the other time it was Ultimate Frisbee They were playing Ultimate Frisbee.
Okay, that's just bad. Some of it's just bad luck.
Right. But, you know, anytime that a player that plays a specific sport gets hurt doing something outside of that sport, people are going to raise hell about
dodgeball.
It.
Dodgeball. Just play dodgeball with the fellas. Like, that's the safe.
No quarterback, though. Can't be popping a UCL playing dodgeball.
Quarterback can't be doing that. That is the safest, you can still be aggressive type sport, dodgeball. I don't know a single person who has suffered a serious, like, season-ending injury playing dodgeball. And now someone in chat will name them, of course, but I can't think of any single time in life. I mean, they do it at the Pro Bowl now.
Shane Beamer looks like he blesses himself when he sneezes.
Oh, little Quinn and Williams.
Yeah. Bless me.
And then he said thank you, too.
Thanking yourself is the really crazy part. I've seen the bless you in a quiet room by yourself. I've done that.
Yeah.
Not awesome. Bless me, though. I hit it with a bless you.
No, he said God bless you, and I said thank you. One sentence. Crazy.
God bless you. Thank you. We good on this story?
I think we are.
Yeah. All right, man. Hey, lucky bounce, lucky shake there. That this is not like season ending.
Yeah,
though.
Some people thought it was season ending.
Yeah, for real.
Like,
yeah.
Their initial reports were torn ACL.
Not a lot of good news out of that place lately.
Yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah. Speaking of not a lot of good news. Not a lot of good news coming out of the Tennessee court systems for the Volunteer fan base, as Joey Aguilar will be in Indianapolis with us this weekend at the NFL Combine because he lost his court case. Now, I think if you've heard me talk about this impending quarterback battle, because I'd had it on pretty good authority that he wasn't looking good to win this case for a couple weeks now. And if you've heard me talk about this, I've talked about where I lie on this decision of the future of the quarterback room. I think this is good for the long-term health of the Tennessee football program, but particularly the quarterback room and its long-term development, because we live very much so in a salary sport now. Whether or not there's a cap, you can determine that yourself, but there is a determined salary at Tennessee. They can only spend so much money, and they've spent a lot of money on high school quarterbacks. That has been their method of operations most of the time. And we'll talk about why they've altered from that briefly. But the intentions of this program were to be built off of high school recruiting at the quarterback position. And they've done it, in their opinion, really, really well. Right? They identified George McIntyre early in the process, got him committed, and kept him committed. Same thing with Faison Brandon a couple of classes later. Maybe just right after that. No, it was a couple of classes later, wasn't it? But guys, like the NFL... In college now, we have a time length on all these contracts, but more importantly, there's a window. There's a window of opportunity for us to have excellent quarterback play tied with a good roster to go on and compete for a title. That's the whole goal, right? And we also know, because we cover college football, we watch college football, odds are for young football players that window of excellent quarterback play is going to be coming in years two, or better yet, year three in the system. Tennessee is very much a byproduct of this statement. Hendon Hooker's explosion year was in year two in that system and playing for Josh Heupel up there with the Volunteers. So that's where they want to be. That's where they need to be. And guess what? George McIntyre is a sophomore right now. So we better get into this window and we better find out what George McIntyre is, because guess what? Next year, Faison Brandon is going to be a sophomore. All right. So essentially no different than when you draft a rookie quarterback. All right, and then 3 or 4 years into his contract, either he hasn't played or he's been injured or he hasn't played well enough to where we know he's the guy. Year four and year five is decision time. In my opinion, in college football, when you buy a really, really expensive high school prospect at the quarterback position in particular, year two, sophomore year, basically is year four in NFL terms, because we have to decide whether or not this guy is the guy, or we better go find somebody who is, which brings me to my next point. Tennessee's quarterback room got altered by a circumstance that was unforeseen, right? Like, we didn't know Nico was going to blow up like it did, and now all of a sudden they're scrounging for a one-year rental. And it turned out to be a one-year rental, and it needs to remain that. And you need to go back to the course of operations that you have dedicated yourself to for quite some time now. I think Joey Aguilar not being available is the best thing for the long-term health of this quarterback room.
Yeah, I mean you got to get some answers about either one of those guys, because even if Joey Aguilar would have been – like, let's phrase it this way as well. Had Joey Aguilar returned for another season this year, do we think it would have drastically impacted the projections of Tennessee this season?
Jonathan, that was my next point. What we learned last year watching Aguilar in year one in that system is that That dude's going to throw – he's going to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
So if we're going to be turnover prone anyways, why not do it with a young player? If we're going to take lumps, why not take learning lumps?
Right. And I think that next season is kind of anyways this year that Tennessee fans think they might be back into the competitive nature of the SEC, like back in the conversation of being a playoff contender. So had Joey Aguilar return this season to start, you're only going to delay the development of your quarterbacks and potentially hurt yourself next year when I think Tennessee fans again think that's when they're going to be really competitive again.
Yeah, I mean, buying these – because you're only going to get one more year of Joey Aguilar, even if he did get the extra year of eligibility. Is that 1 year worth the 2 to 3 that you're going to be forced to sacrifice moving down the road? Because let's be honest, and this is not to besmirch Joey Aguilar, it wasn't like Joey Aguilar was playing – Heisman-level football or first-round draft pick-level football. If he was, he wouldn't have had any qualms about going into the NFL draft this year. So I don't think Tennessee is losing that much. Yeah, they're losing continuity. Yeah, they're going to have their fifth starter in as many seasons. That part sucks. But I think, like you said, in the long run, this is going to work out for them better.
I feel like Joey played really good. I think there's an opportunity that one of those two young quarterbacks could be really great in this system.
Yeah.
And we need to, if we have to go through growing pains to get to really great, we need to start doing that now. We don't need to delay that any further. You mentioned, like, him, if Joey were to come back, we're just creating backlog. That's all we're doing. We're creating backlog. We're asking guys to take red shirts and sit in next year that we don't need to be doing. We're pushing the clock down further and further in a sport where, and we just learned this even further at this in this discussion, time spans are limited, right? Like, eligibilities are limited. We only have so many years to actually do this as a starter at these programs. So,
agree.
I think this is good, ultimately good, because if he gets awarded the extra year, he's going to start for 12 games. He's going to be the guy. And then you're basically hoping for us to destroy teams for to even get a look in a developmental setting at George McIntyre. That's not the ideal situation right about now for these guys. Speaking of quarterbacks, boys, I do have some concerns, okay? Now, this is really, really early, okay? Really, really early, and I've felt so cautious about delivering this take that I even had to call around to other scouting departments this afternoon and make sure I'm not crazy. But I spent about 4 hours today watching the top 11 consensus quarterbacks in the 2027 recruiting class. And I don't know if we got a lot of, like, dudes, like, really, really high-end guys. Now, the two that I asked you to pull up tapes on, do we have those tapes ready?
I'll get it pulled up.
All right, please do. I'm going to tell you that now because I'm going to go through the rest of these guys. Now, there are 11 names. Whether you're a 24/7 sports guy or an on-three guy, there's really a consensus, like, group of 11 right now that are really, really high up early on in the process in 2027. Here are those football players. Elijah Haven, Israel Abrams, Kavion Bryant, Trey Taylor, Colton Nussmeier, Gunnar Rivers, Jace Johnson, Peter Borke, I guess is how I would pronounce that, Peyton Houston, Malachi Ziegler, and Will Mensel, who is a fast riser. Will Mensel just went from completely unranked on three to the number four player in the nation. I watched it today, and look, no offense, I'm not saying anything cross about those recruiting rankings. It is what it is. He is Miller Moss reincarnated. That's what that is. I watched that today, and look, Miller Moss, really, really good football player. Mm-hmm. Really good football player. Is he the number four football player in the country? I don't think so. I watched the Malachi Ziegler tape today. It was okay. All these guys, I'm going to throw some skepticism apart from two of them. And all of them, apart from Colton Nussmeier, in my opinion, are playing like real bad comp. Like not at all. Like most of these guys are the biggest, fastest, strongest kid on the field, apart from their wide receiver who obviously transferred in to play with a good quarterback. That's what we got going on. So I don't know what I'm arriving at, whether or not we have like some developmental issue. I don't think it's that big of a deal because the rest of the 2027 class is borderline historic deep at positions like edge and positions like wide receiver. But let's talk about it. Elijah Haven is consensus the number one ranked quarterback in America. He has no available tape. There is no available huddle tape. There's no highlights that you can go watch. So what I had to do today was go watch a YouTube cut up that somebody went and watched his game and filmed it of him. Very, very traitsy. 6'5", 230 pounds. Can throw it a country mile. If there's anybody in this class that's like height, weight, speed, like velocity, big enough, fast enough, strong enough to be a quote-unquote five-star, I'm okay with it. Elijah Haven. If he ends up going to Alabama, which is what it's projected to be, he will be the least polished pocket passer that I've ever seen Kalen DeBoer sign. Like, the rest of them are top to bottom, like, do all their work from the pocket and do it, like, fundamentally clean. This is a traitsy take if they ultimately do that at Alabama. Israel Abrams is a rail-thin football player, 6'5", 195 pounds. Looked like he broke himself in half throwing a post. I mean, rail thin. Great layer. All these guys are great with the touch and accuracy. They spin it really, really well. But there's not a lot of, apart from the Elijah Havens, not a lot of juice in this class. Kavion Bryant, 6'2", 180. The kid goes to sleep watching Cam Ward. Goes to sleep watching Cam Ward. Looks like that, basically, from what you see from a pocket standpoint. He ain't in it. Ain't in the pocket long. He's freelancing out there. Trey Taylor, the Nebraska commit. He's all right. Mm-hmm. He's like a top 25 player in the country right now. Mm. Colton Nussmeier is a left-handed Garrett.
Okay.
With an extra inch. I mean, it's fun. It's great ball tape. Mm-hmm. Like, every ball is like, whoa. Surprise, honest to God, surprise Alabama ain't in on that one. That's what it looks like. It's like Alabama quarterback tape. I'm saving Gunner Rivers because he's a dude. Jace Johnson, I mean, you've seen him.
Twice.
You've seen him.
Yeah.
I love the athlete. I don't love the mechanics of the thrower.
Yeah.
You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of why people bought into Kamario Taylor. Honestly. The Mississippi State kid. Peter Bourquet is a 2008 five-star, is what I wrote down on him. 6'5", an absolute mammoth in the pocket. Mm-hmm. You know where he goes to school?
Where?
He goes to school where Ryan Puglisi is from.
Oh, okay.
The Mass school up there.
Yeah.
And he playing Timmy and Tyler, and he running around like he ain't 6'5", 230, and lead-footed. And then I already talked about the Will Mansell kid. Now, of all of the players, now this very well could change because it is so, so early in the process. Of all the players that I have watched, all right, all 11 of those guys are probably slotted to be million-dollar quarterbacks. They're all inside the top 100. They're all going to Power 4 schools. They're all probably going to make north of seven figures. There's only two of them that I'd actually give that money to, and it's Peyton Houston, the LSU commit. And it's Gunner Rivers, the NC State now commit. So this is topical because he just committed. Who are we watching first?
Gunner Rivers.
Let's do this because we have watched the Peyton Houston tape. And the Peyton Houston tape is electric. This right here, this looks like his daddy. I mean, he looks just like Phillip. And he's playing big time quarterback. I ain't just playing ball. He's playing quarterback. Let's go watch this. All righty. I'm going to take the chain off so we don't get any popping on the microphone. Go ahead and play it for me, Jonathan.
All right.
All right, now, what amazes me about this, okay, and what you should know, I know I said play it and then I pause it immediately. What you should know about this is they run the same exact system that the Indianapolis Colts do. They run an NFL system. That is why Phillip Rivers got brought up so quickly, because him and Shane Steichen, I believe that's the head coach at Indianapolis, him and Shane Steichen were on the phone every single week talking about the offense because Phillip was coaching the offense here. So Phillip's his coach. They run an NFL system. All right, that's what you need to know. Now watch how many NFL throws this dude makes and watch how many of them look, again, just like his daddy. He throws with the same exact mechanics that Papa does. I mean, we got big rips on this one. We got a couple of them where we're taking absolute kill shots off the chest. And we're just letting it fling. I love this right here. This looks like a standard high school like quarterback throw, but I know what we're working. We're working a sail from number two over here, mm-hmm. which if the pocket were clean, first of all, right hash, far left side sail. That's a big time arm throw. But if the pocket were clean, we'd stand in there and rip it. But if we get pressure, where's our escape strategy? It better be to the left, right? Side. We talk about that on this network all the time. He immediately knows to get to his left, buys time for that sail. All right, big time rip right there from the kid. And we'll see more and more of it down here. It's a great touch throw from him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these back angle shots is what it really, really looks like his dad to me. I mean, even his drip, we got none of it on. None of it. Watch him run right here. Tell me that don't look like his daddy.
Oh, my gosh. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that is.
All right, so there's a couple of these guys are in this class. Now, he's 6'4 and a half, I think. I think he's big, thick, NFL pedigree. A couple of these guys are, like, going to be college pocket passers, like is what's all on this tape, but they ain't that big, and they don't have this many big-time throws within the pocket. If I were just buying a thrower, this is the one I'm going to buy. Look at this throw coming up right here, dude. Not this one. The next one with pressure in the face. That's a, we got man coverage, go throw the go ball. This one right here with a blitzing mic, that's goofy. And did you see the other, he looks like his dad moment on this play we just got done watching? Watch him turn around and talk to somebody. I don't know who he's talking to, but I've seen Phillip do that a million times on the way to a touchdown. That throw right there is goofy.
That's such a good throw. Oh, man. The anticipation of it's what's, you know what I mean? Impressive.
It's rare when I watch high school tape. We know we got to hold that to hit the square in. Rare when I watch high school tape where I can tell that the football player is playing the position, mm-hmm. not just running around making plays. Now, this next guy we're going to watch, he's probably doing a lot of that because he is a twitchy monster. This kid right here is playing the position from the pocket.
That is a terrifying midfield logo.
Yeah, that thing is kind of spooky.
I think there's a difference in a lot of prospects that are really good at throwing to guys that are open versus quarterbacks that can throw guys open.
Great way of putting it, Kirby.
Which is what he's doing here.
Honestly, like, that's not just prospect. That's all across the board, right? Like, from it gets harder and harder and requires you to be more of an anticipatory thrower and tight window thrower the further and further we go up the sport. So that's a great point right there, man. Double move. Now, that's a big defense. I don't know. This is Middle Earth, South Alabama football, I think. Those look like big boys.
Oh, yeah, they're
over there. We got pressure, move up in the pocket, take the hit. I mean, he looks just like his dad.
Mm-hmm. And not one running play in the tape.
No, you won't see it. That's what I'm saying. If I'm buying a... All right, we know we're going to get like maybe a run a day because he scrambled for 2 yards type of prospect. This is the one I'm taking.
But it's also not that he's not a statue. Like, he's very good at working his way in the mm-hmm. pocket. He's very good at creating time. He's not a threat with his legs, but.
Will you look at his 24/7 page and see if they actually dared to comp him to his dad? Because if they didn't, come on, man. What are we doing? I love the footwork right there. Watch this next rep. Such a clean drop when most of these guys we'll see just catch the ball and kind of float backwards till they hit their back foot.
Reminds us of Phillip Rivers.
Good, good. I bet, is that Andrew Ivins?
Yeah.
Hey, man. Andrew Ivins is a daggone ball knower. I'm going to tell you that right now. I don't know what the chat thinks about Andrew Ivins, but I got a tremendous amount of respect. All right, now let's watch this cat. Now, this is going to be like, I don't know, drinking... I don't even know a metaphor here. The difference in these two football players. Give me a metaphor here. This will be like, screw it. Let's just watch it. You'll see how different they are. Doop.
I do remember watching this tape last
year. Oh, dude, we watched the junior tape or the sophomore tape mm-hmm. last year. This is the junior tape. Oh, yeah, man. Here we go. Here's the freedom of movement that I was talking about. What in the world?
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh? We found juice like that? You know who's explained those moving to our left throws better than anybody? Whoever's training Mahomes. I saw a video of them literally just doing like spinal rotations under load.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what are they doing? And then the trainer starts talking about how, oh, throwing the football is all spinal rotation. If you can get your spine to rotate with my lower body this way, I've stretched the band, mm-hmm. if you will. His ability to do that is really, really, really elite. It's another example. He tried to get another example of it right there. But nope, we're taking off. Yank.
Oh, man.
Now, he didn't commit to LSU when Lane Kiffin was the head coach, correct?
I don't think so.
But I was going to. But what I was going to say is this looks like a Lane Kiffin quarterback.
Dude. Lane going there only solidified this one, I would imagine.
I mean, this is everything that Lane would want in a quarterback.
Honestly, from a throwing mechanics standpoint, that's a reload, find my guy that's running clean. But, like, that throw right there, that looked like Trinidad Chambliss. Mm-hmm. He's built like Trinidad, too. Built like a running back, playing quarterback. He's even got if I remember correctly, he's even got, like, a running back face mask. He's got the sidebar face mask, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Look at that drop. How far back into the pocket are we?
Looking at.
It's like a 10.
My God. Was that a play action rollout or did he? What in the world? Is this halftime?
No, you know what? This one, that looks like a fake punt. That looks like they have an.
Oh, okay.
Had to have been.
Okay.
Had to have been a fake punt.
They're doing it again. What's up with these deep pockets, man? That's a seed, brother.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man. This kid already qualified for Elite 11 Finals, I think.
Makes sense.
He's my pick to win.
I mean, honestly, dude, we got to give Brian Kelly some flowers for this.
Yeah. Joe Sloan some flowers?
I'm not seeing anything about him in the Elite 11, but that doesn't mean it's not true.
His running abilities are Lamar-esque.
You know what I was thinking? Because of the stature? I was thinking he looks like Derek King when he takes off.
That's probably a better comp, honestly.
But he is obviously a much better thrower than Derek. So if anybody's wondering, that's my QB1, and then Gunner's my QB2, and I don't really have a QB3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And if you want to push back on me, give me a suggestion of a quarterback you think that is deemed worthy in that. I saw some clips of the kid that's committed to Ohio State out of his Elite 11 regional. That ball hums. I forget his name. But, yeah, man, I reached out to a couple of scouting departments. They felt the same way. It's like, it is, but, you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to be all right. We got dudes at every other position in this class,
Do you think it – could just be that it's like, would you classify it as like it's a high floor class?
Yeah. I mean, like, again, there's a bunch of kids in there where I'm like, 2 years from now, you might be something.
Okay.
I just don't. There's not a Jared Curtis in that class. There's not a Keyshawn Henderson in this class. There's not a Hassan Longstreet in this class.
Yeah, this pass recruiting class.
There's not a Bryce Underwood in this class. Or
from a quarterback standpoint, there are a lot of big names in this pass recruiting class.
Normally there is, you know. I think the Rivers kid is going to be an absolute stud. They're going to go from C.J. Bailey, who's going to be a top five quarterback selected, to Gunnar Rivers. Not a bad little transition for those guys out there.
Speaking of transition, why don't we go and give a shout out to our friends over at Sleeper. If you don't know by now, it is a fantasy sports and real money gaming app that is focused on bringing people together through sports and gaming. They have become the fastest organically growing fantasy platform in the world with over 6 million active users and are earning some of the highest levels of engagement in the industry. At Sleeper, it's not just about sports. It's about building personal connections and lasting memories. And they've recently added a new feature for team picks, which you can actually pick which team will win certain games instead of just player props. So go ahead and check that out. If you use promo code Brooks today, you will get a $100 match, up to $100. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. They are also operational in over 25 states, including the great state of Georgia. Once again, that is promo code Brooks.
Now, that quarterback discussion is going to be interesting like 7 years from now. Maybe we'll come back and look at it. Maybe it has 7 first-rounders in it.
Yeah,
you never know.
You never know. Some of the ones that feel like there's a couple of classes where they damn near rank 5 five-stars at the position. Then other years where it's like 3.
The 5 and 6 five-star classes don't usually pan out, I feel like.
No.
It's always the – this kid was a 3-star, and now look at him. He's a first-round draft pick.
What is really, really hard nowadays, and I don't know if it was like this because I've only been doing this for 7 years, 8 years now. everywhere I go, there's a dude that absolutely spins the shit out of football.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere I go. And back in the day, it was like, oh my God, I found this one that can throw it 70 yards. It's like, dude, there's everybody spinning it now. Everybody is throwing really, really well. But that's not playing the position.
No.
We talk about that all the time. So it's still a crapshoot game, and I think it's almost gotten made harder because everybody's pretty and everybody's polished and everybody's clean. So when they come to you, it's all about what's between the ears. Well, all I've been looking at is him in shorts and T-shirts and on tape.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in his ears. Hopefully it's not wax buildup. Who is next year's Clemson? Who is next year's Penn State? Who is next year's LSU? Those are three programs, in my opinion, last year, boys, that went into the season on paper looking like they had the abilities to compete to be one of the 12 best teams in college football, and thus were deemed playoff worthy or thus carried playoff expectations, okay? I guarantee you all three of those programs in-house spoke about winning national titles last year, and they were some poop. So who's it going to be this year? Who is going to be the football team that preseason, everybody's like, hey, man, that team right there, and then they end up being some poop? Or at least underperforming.
Yeah, the two candidates that I came up with are pretty spicy, if I had to say so myself. Like, they're in the hot take category, if you will, which is a super overused term nowadays. But I would say that both of them, if you want to push back on them, I would completely agree with you but as far as like the circumstances and maybe like a reason as to why maybe there would be a drop off, I feel like both of these teams fell under that category. The first one being Ohio State.
No!
Like, let me just put it this way. Didn't love Julian Sayin all that much this year. Like, super efficient passer. Oh, wow. Stayed ahead of the chains offensively. Yeah, I know. Are you going to go ahead and do that? Yeah.
What just happened?
Kirby Smart made a joke with Mario Cristobal about NIL and Ellis Robinson. So,
well, no. And then Mario Cristobal just clapped back with
Yeah, it's just a joking matter. Two head coaches joking.
Got it.
I saw that a minute ago. But anyways, yeah, Ohio State, Julian Sayin, he's an efficient quarterback but doesn't have a whole lot of wow factor. Now, Jeremiah Smith, that's going to help a lot with that offense this year. But losing a guy like Carnell Tate, I think that could kind of provide some blowback on this offense a little bit. But defensively, too, I mean, you're losing 3-4 really, really good football players, like two of them being Caleb Downs and Sonny Styles. Like, we're talking about two first-round draft picks defensively this year. And on top of that, I would even go as far as to say is Ohio State was good defensively, but it really kind of hinged on those two guys and a few others that are now in the NFL draft. So I just feel like there's an opportunity for this offense and the defense both to kind of maybe take a little bit of a step back. Now, I assume that Julian Sayin will get better this year, but I don't know if it's going to be as drastic as this guy's one of the best quarterbacks now in all of college football.
Well, we certainly know his workload's going to increase this year. They're not going to go around keeping teams to under 8 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. If they do, Matt Patricia is a head coach in college football somewhere pretty soon. I mean, my God, they lost. And I know it's Ohio State. It's like saying, they're one of the haves. So when they lose seven what feels like first-round draft picks on defense, they normally spit them back out. But, you know, it felt like offensively they lost some firepower after their national title. Mm-hmm. And after this year, it feels like all the firepower defensively is now gone.
Right. So I just think that there's some significant losses on both sides of the ball where I could see where. And now, this is not me predicting that Ohio State is going to go 9-3.
Well, I was about to say, Jonathan, 9-3 is catastrophic for that program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It will feel like that. But and it's a tough schedule.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, it could just be a simple 10-2. But as far as, like, the overall success of the season, I could see it being somewhat of a letdown.
Hmm.
I want to go with a team that I think kind of surprised some people last year with how competitive it was in the college football playoff. Not college football playoff, but the regular season. I think Texas A&M could be gearing up for what might be a big disappointment. Now, I'll first come out and say, I don't know if we have a Clemson, a Penn State, or a LSU in this season where start of the season you're in the top 10 and by the end of the year you're fighting for bowl eligibility. I don't know if it's going to get that bad for teams, but Colin Klein was a big piece to this offense. The Aggies needed an X receiver, and they went and got that from Isaiah Horton, so that's good. But there's still a lot of questions coming around about Marcel Reed and about what this offense can be. I think that they could be setting themselves up for big disappointments. And let's, by the way, they were 11-1 at the end of the regular season. They very well could have been 9-3.
Yeah. I think the one good news, like good portion of this for A&M is that, in my opinion, they have – year in, year out, despite coaching turnover, have been a top 10 talent roster. They got good football players every year, I feel like. Now, what's very different in 2026, it's very new for them, is they're having to replace a school record NFL draft like combine invitees. So they're going to lose a lot more than they're accustomed to from, you know, high-quality players going out. Everyone's used to players leaving nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's when you lose great ones, that's when it matters. And it feels like they certainly have. Especially on the, I mean, defensively, man. Again, harping back on that side of the ball, like, Torin York was the guy. Mm-hmm. Torin York, I'm pretty sure, by the second year in that program, was a true sophomore and was brought to SEC Media Days as their captain.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's a big-time dude. There that they lost, and it's not just him, it's Cassius Howell and several others. So we'll see. My candidates, I had to put Texas on here because I think anything short of winning a national title will feel like a shortcoming to most in that fan base. Mm-hmm. And that's who we're talking about, right?
You gotta finish top four.
Yeah, you gotta. I honest to God, I think you have to play for a national title, and if you lose, you have to lose by within a score.
That's fair.
I think the pressure is that high for people at Texas this year.
Feels that way. I mean,
it should be.
Like, no.
It should be. That's my opinion about what they did this offseason.
They've reached 2020-2021 Georgia status, where it's like, all right, we've gotten to the next tier. You need to get us to the top now, or we're going to start getting antsy.
But see, yeah. I somewhat see what you're saying, but like, I would even say to the point of, like, I don't know if people were really expecting that much of Georgia heading into that season. Now, but I'm more so say, like, by the time that Stetson Bennett transitioned into the starting quarterback role, like, I think people were really high on JT Daniels, but I think some of it kind of got brushed off a little bit when it was, oh, Stetson Bennett's the starting quarterback. I don't know how far that goes. But as far as expectation goes of you got to win a national title now, it certainly has reached that point.
I just think anything short of that is going to feel like, uh-oh. Now, they're not going – the bottom's not going to fall out there, but – like it did at the examples, right? It fell out at Clemson. It fell out on the bottom at Penn State. It felt like that at LSU.
Yeah. My second team on this list is Miami.
I think it's going to be good again.
Offense is going to be good. I think the offense is going to be great.
Yeah. They're
defensively,
losing.
I don't know.
They got Torrey back, the 17th year senior.
Yeah, they got Torrey. They got Lightfoot. But, I mean, you're losing
Damon Wilson. They got Justin Scott.
But we're
they
talking
got
about
that number 18 who's really, really good. I think they're going to be good. They had a bunch of young corners last year.
That's fine. But we're talking about Reuben Bain, who was arguably maybe the best player in college football this past season. Mesidor was really good for them this past year as well. Jacoby Thomas was really great in the secondary for them. They're losing multiple starters that were elite on the offensive line. Now, again, I say that with Darian Mensah, really, really good. I think that the wide receivers are going to be fine, especially with Malachi Toney and the Duke transfer that they got. But defensively, that's what carried them in the playoffs this past year. And it was Reuben Bain being one of the best players on the field, or the best player on the field almost at all times. And maybe they don't have to play that way this year because the offense will be better than it was, or I should say more explosive than it was this past year. But I could see there being a step back enough defensively to where it might create some concerns for them.
And it's not just Mesidor and Bain. They lost both tackles that are NFL football players, and they're starting center. So there's a lot there to be concerned about. I look at them as the most talented team in that conference by a relatively wide margin.
And we said that about Clemson last year.
Here's my worry for Miami. They still have found ways to trip on their own feet and stumble. And yes, and I think that what they did in that run they went on the college football playoff kind of makes us forget that they were a very up and down team throughout the regular season. And they have been the last 2 years despite being one of the most talented in the conferences. Who's to say that they're not going to fall and go 9-3 this year? They very well could go 11-1. Hell, they could go 12-0 with that schedule. But I do get what you're saying in that they could fall off. Another team that I kind of think might take a step back. I don't know if it's going to be catastrophic, like I said, but Indiana lost a lot of people. Now, they got Josh Hoover. They've replaced a lot. I mean, we trust Kurt Signe's process in the transfer portal. But
they've lost the entire James Madison core.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All of those guys that were the Aiden Fishers of the world, the edge rushers gone, mm-hmm. the two, you know, they've lost the whole Signetti core, that's for sure.
And here's what I want to say about that. We've seen when you're, you know, quote-unquote core from transfer portal players leaves, it doesn't always go very pretty. Now, again, you have to trust Kurt Signe's process within the transfer portal because they've had more hits than not. However, we have seen the Florida States of the world where one year it's national championship caliber team and the next year it's off a cliff. Again, I don't think that's what it's going to be with Indiana, but I wouldn't be shocked if they pop a 9-3 this year.
Mm. And, I mean, that's just kind of like the natural flow, too, of winning national titles. Now, it seems in this newer era of college football, like Michigan took a step back after winning their national title. Ohio State took a step back after winning their national title. Now, it's Indiana's turn, and we're going to see, like, I think everybody kind of expects that they're not going to be what they were last year. But it could be somewhat of a step back to the point of, you know, maybe they barely miss the playoffs, or maybe they're a 9 seed in the playoffs to the tune of that.
I don't know about you boys. I've learned my lesson over the last 2 years. I will not be doubting Kurt
Signe. I'm not doubting them. I mean, I think they're going to be a contender in the Big Ten.
I mean, I think it's a safe assumption they're not going to repeat. I think so from that standpoint alone, they're going to take a step back.
Right.
So I highly doubt they go undefeated.
But also to that, I don't think there's anything that could disappoint Indiana fans this year.
No.
I don't think that they're – unless you don't win a single game, unless you are that putrid this year, I don't think there is anything that would create disappointment amongst Indiana fans.
Did you see the homie Dan Orlovsky be like, I don't really understand this Fernando Mendoza stuff. Did you see that today?
No, I didn't.
He was like, I'm like 5 games into this Fernando tape. Interesting. Like, don't really know what's going on here.
I will say, like,
from an NFL standpoint, like an NFL guy standpoint, going from watching NFL year round to then watching an offense that a quarter of the time is running RPOs,
yeah,
you probably don't know what you're watching.
And he's not your traditional first overall pick in the NFL draft, first quarterback off the board. Like, this guy isn't just dripping with tools, like the traits pop off the tape, anything like that. Like, there's nothing that just completely wows you other than the fact of that guy plays on time and he can throw a ball in a precise location consistently.
South Carolina feels like a football program that is one Lenoris ankle roll. Like, dude, it's an ankle roll this year.
It's been 2 seasons in a row that he's missed games.
No. But this year it's going to be like, oh, I got an NFL. So like, we are going to the NFL next year, no doubt. So if there is any, hey, if you play through this and it goes worse, you're going to have surgery. Appreciate you, Gamecocks. Like, that's what it should be. You know what I mean? So we're one of those away from what?
And for guys like him that just – and you see it at the NFL level consistently, and you see it at the collegiate level as well. But I fear that you're really going to see it with Lenoris because this is going to be year three now of him starting for this offense. And hopefully they have fixed this issue, but it's not off to a great start of they have not protected him. This guy has been taking shots his entire career. Now, thankfully, he's built the way that he is. I mean, he can take a lot of hits, but it wears and tears on you.
We know Kenneth Brown is going to be running him.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, they're going to be doing some dusted off quarterback run.
I was going to say, I didn't include this team in my list because
you don't expect much from them?
No, they're not, and they're understand not in that. My top 10 category.
I mean, dude, season. they're 7-5, 8-4 range if it goes decently.
It could very quickly go off the rails, though. I mean, this could be a you're fired by October year for Shane Beamer. Mm-hmm. It could get that ugly. I get what you're saying there, but the expectations are nowhere near what
not
Penn
nationally.
State, LSU, or Clemson had last year.
You guys good?
Mm-hmm.
I got one more.
Who you got?
Look, I'm devil's advocate here. Don't shoot the messenger. But this is going to be a year where we go into a Georgia football season talking about projection of people who got better.
Yeah.
So-and-so had to get better. Hope they did. Let's go see it.
Mm-hmm.
So-and-so had to get better. Let's hope. What if guys like CJ Wiley aren't as good as Colby Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
What if Talon Taylor doesn't step into the role? Did I do it again?
You morphed the two.
Colby Young. Morphing them. What if he's not good enough to replace those two players?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What if Zachariah Branch's production doesn't get replaced?
Yeah.
What if Gunner doesn't take a step forward?
No, I mean, it's certainly all real issues that Georgia could have. I don't think that there's any world where we're looking up and saying that that team is in the Clemson or the Penn States of the world. I think, like, again, like we've talked about the entire time, 9-3 is the floor.
Absolutely.
And is the
it would be catastrophic.
It would be you'd be having fire alarms everywhere. Yeah. But 9-3, I mean, Texas was 9-3 last year, and there were people saying that they should be a playoff team. So, like, like, I don't think that Georgia's ever under Kirby Smart, knock on wood, going to be in a position where it's like, oh, they were top 10 preseason and then just went 7-5. Yikes. Like, that's never going
to
happen.
So, like, to put it in simple terms, would you say that how you would project Georgia this year purely hinges on the fact of hinges on what the wide receiver room does?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think offensively they're solid everywhere else, Jonathan.
Oh, that's what I was going to say is like you,
the left guard's a question mark, but everything else is a known. Yeah, they're going to be really, really good everywhere else.
You have a known answer at your quarterback. You have known answers at your running back position. You know what you have at tight end for the most part.
We have a 600-yard known answer at the wide receiver position, and his name is London Humphreys.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's a bunch of
– Yeah, I mean,
like, it's – we think he's really good. We don't know.
Yeah, wasn't
like
it that last year, though?
Kind of.
I felt like coming over, I think we talked about Zachariah. Guys, going into the season, we talked about Zachariah Branch breaking records.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, you knew –
But that was projection.
You knew what Dylan Bell was.
It was projection off a known college tape.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, three games into that kid's freshman year, he was about to win the Heisman.
But, again, we were also going off a projection of, okay, yeah, Zachariah Branch had really great college tape. So did Dominic Lovett. So mm-hmm. did, you know – God forbid, Ra-Ra Thomas. So did a lot of these other guys that have not panned out in the past of the transfer. Like, there was a lot of projection being done last year's roster. Now, it worked out, so it all ended up being correct. But I think we had more doubts about last year's roster than we're giving credit for now.
All right, I got some Lane Kiffin drama. You want to hear it?
Oh, boy.
Well, sure. First I want to ask you this question. Do you want your college football head coach and leader of your organization tweeting 1,170 times a year?
How many games is he
winning? A year.
You said 171.
No. 1,170 times in a year. That is over 3.5 tweets a day.
Okay.
About 3 tweets a day.
Okay. What'd you say, Kirby?
How many games is he winning?
In this particular case, in this particular calendar year, you get 1,170 tweets from your head football coach. 11 wins and a departure before the college football playoff run.
No, I would not want that. But okay. But devil's advocate, when that run was going on and everything was hunky dory, Ole Miss loved that shit. They were eating that up. They were
well. That's what I was going to say. This is the quote I wanted to read to you.
So much so, before you do that, so much so they pre-ordered plushies of Juice Kiffin to give out at the baseball game.
A generic golden retriever.
We all know that was Juice.
Generic golden retriever.
We all know that was Juice, and you can't send it.
We know that was you, Juice.
Generic golden retriever, Kirby.
All right, so here's the deal. Here's the quote from the article today. They tracked it with the Sabermetrics on Twitter, apparently. Okay. Kiffin's X account became especially active during the 2025 college football season, starting with a surge in September. But the peak came in late November and early December as he weighed his future. Rumors swirled about whether he would leave Ole Miss or LSU while the Rebels' season was still going on. You'll sign up for that?
Yeah, well, I don't know that, too.
Now, as a beat reporter and a content creator,
you love it.
Bring that this way, my
bring
man.
It on.
Bring that this way. We appreciate it. I don't know if I want that as a as somebody who's, you know, maybe contributing to these organizations nowadays.
Yeah, I look.
Because you are. You're like you like have stock points, and your stock points and your return on investment is winning and winning chips and telling your buddies, I help fund that.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's very simple in the terms of if you're winning, nobody cares what you're doing on Twitter. And I think you see it with some athletes too, because – like, when things are going great for an athlete, it's like, oh, yeah, look at this guy cracking jokes on social media. But then if they have a horrible game on Sunday, it's like, hop off social media, buddy, and go run some routes.
The epitome of this is Shane Beamer. If South Carolina is doing what they – winning 9 to 10 games and they're doing the, you know, full house stuff and all the jokes and all the things, everyone loves that. Shane Beamer is one of the most likable coaches in college football at that point because he's fun, he relates to the players. When they're doing what they did last year and going 4-8, it's like, bro, Get on the practice field. Stop this.
When Shane Beamer starts firing up the just got off the phone with a future Gamecock and the hen tweet, he's in trouble. The reason I really wanted to bring up this Lane Kiffin thing is, did y'all see what happened to him yesterday on Twitter?
No.
So he's
my
been,
Twitter feed the last 24 hours has been strictly Canada jokes, and I'm fine with that.
Suck it, Canada.
Oh, I didn't even notice you wrote that.
So he's been going back and forth recently with Ole Miss's women's basketball coach for some peculiar reason. Yesterday he tweeted a photo of love watching women's sports win. Obviously another jab at the women's sports teams at Ole Miss. And sent a photo of him at the LSU women's basketball game in which they're up 85-37. The top reply in said tweet, gentlemen, is an LSU fan who happened to sit behind Lane Kiffin last night at this basketball game. And it says, love Lane and love LSU, but he was there from the media timeout in the third to the media timeout in the fourth. He came to take this picture and prove to a coach that isn't at this school and then left.
See, now these are the parts of Lane Kiffin's social media antics where I'm like, oh, like, buddy, we got to draw the line somewhere.
This is why I ask, because like, it's one thing to tweet over 1,000 times, over 1,100 times. It's another thing to do stuff like this where he consciously, I would assume, left his office, left whatever it was that he was doing, and spent 10 minutes to go take a photo at a women's basketball game and then get up and leave.
Yeah, like, we're going out of our way to troll a coach that isn't, like, again, it's a women's basketball coach at Ole Miss. Like, some things you just got to let it slide. And this isn't one of them, in my opinion. Like, dude, like, grow up. That's what I want to say. Grow up.
Also, I'd leave her be. She says she's got the files.
Oh.
Coach Yo over there at Ole Miss, I love that tea. I would.
It's also, like, I think Lane Kiffin's getting too much into the bit now.
Yeah.
I think, like,
we've lost the plot.
He got so heavy-handed with it during the entire process of him going to LSU, or is he going to stay at Ole Miss? And then, like, shortly after he gets hired at LSU, like, he's continuing this bit. Like, and it's gotten to the point now where, like, he might be having, like, genuine intent with some of his messaging, like, when he's talking about how much he loves Ole Miss. But everything now comes across as it's a backhanded compliment. That's what it comes – like, him saying, I love women's sports. No one takes it as genuine anymore. It's just a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, and it's also, like, 2 or 3 years ago, Lane Kiffin would send something like this, you know, once a week. And it was like – look, Lane Kiffin is the perfect heel for college football. He knows what he is, and he does this to rile up opposing fan bases. Now it's almost like, what are you doing now?
Opposing? During the middle of that decision, he's out here tweeting the daily devotionals that were super, like, everyone was very pointed to either I'm leaving or I'm staying. Do y'all remember that? Or we're tweeting out the photo of our little three-paragraph summary, and the three-paragraph summary is, you should leave because the people at the place you're at don't love you enough right now.
Which is why.
And tomorrow's like, you should stay because look at what you've built. It's all yours. And this is what the Lord intended for you.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, 2 to 3 years ago, he wasn't doing that. But now he's gone too far into the bit. So.
All right. We've gone too far into the national hour. We got a whole other hour coming up next. It's a great one. We've got NFL Combine coming up, and I'm going to give you my NFL draft profiles and evals of all the Georgia players involved. See you on the other side of the break.